presenting God's Word. Some of the passages that we've been looking at on Sunday mornings as we've gone through this part of the book of Genesis have begun with C. The title has been given, beginning with C. We've heard of choice. Abram having a choice as to where he went, and he chose to go God's way. We've heard of C beginning with covenant, and Abraham having an agreement with God. That's in simplest terms, God saying, I want a special relationship with you, and he's calling it covenant. There's very little in this passage that's positive that begins with C. Misery, jealousy, despair, and fear. The nearest I can get with C were words like cruel, conflict, and above all, confusion. Now, Abraham was, by any standards, he had both choice and he had covenant. He was a man of God. But he was also, by the standards of his day, a wealthy man in the culture in which he lived. His wealth was measured in livestock, in sheep, goats, and he also had servants or slaves, some no doubt from his time spent in Egypt. Hence the presence of Hagar, who served as maidservant to Sarai. Can I call her Sarah? It's actually much easier. When he went to rescue his nephew, Lot, you may remember, he took over 300 fighting men, which would give us some idea of the size of his household. He was travelling in various places in what we now call the Middle East. He took 300 fighting men. So that was the size, and that was just the young, healthy men who were of military age. And so that gives us some idea of the size of the household and of the tribe that surrounded him. Now, Abraham had chosen to follow God's way for his life. At the start of chapter 12, we heard that he left his homeland to go to the country I will show you. In chapter 15, God had made a covenant, an agreement with Abraham, telling him, among other things, that he would have a son. And God had promised him so many descendants who would occupy the land from Egypt to the Euphrates. He also told him he had so many descendants that if he tried to count them, you might as well try and count the stars in the sky or the dust or the sand on the earth. In other words, don't even think about it. It's a number beyond your understanding. And this was the promise that God had given Abraham. But there was a problem. Abram and his wife Sarah had no children. There was no son who could inherit. And Abraham had had to, in fact, he remembered having to make an agreement with his nephew Lot to make sure that their household didn't fight it out over land. And then he'd seen the way that people did fight over land that was prosperous and the sort of land that he wanted to keep. And Abram, like leaders the world over, and I suspect throughout recorded time, Abram wanted, he needed, he longed for the heir that in his case God had promised to him. One of the first things we learn in English history is probably by Henry VIII. And much of the arguments in Henry VIII's camp were about wanting a son to inherit. In the Civil War, the Wars of the Roses were within memory. Henry did not want to plunge the country into more of the state. He wanted a son who could inherit. So did he know that one of his daughters would prove to be one of our strongest sovereigns. But Abraham here wanted a son. And God had promised it to him. The heir would inherit the goods, work the lands that God had given them, and then ensure the succession to further generations, which had also been promised. That would mean stability in the region, unless chance of war breaking out, though, that he should own the wealth and the resources. That's one of the problems with wealth. Abraham knew the risks, and humanly, he must long for a son. But as the years went by, both he and Sarah must have thought that time was running out for them. In chapter 15, we've read of how Abraham was concerned that Eliezer, his servant, would inherit. This was a custom which was common in the area around about, that a young man could work for the couple for life, and in exchange, if they then adopted him as their son, he could inherit if in the long run the husband and wife had ushered nearby, was accustomed with a wife who had no children, could offer her maidservant to a husband, as we read here. So, probably thinking there was little of any alternative, Abraham and Sarah tried to go ahead of God's plan for them, and for their longed-for descendants. But they tried to think ahead of God's plan, and they let their own plan take priority over their relationship with each other, and then their relationship with God. I think if we read through chapter 16, and God judged Sarah or Abraham too harshly. After all, we know the end of this story from the beginning. We have read how years later, they did have their own son, Isaac. And we have heard the words said to Abraham by God's messengers who came to tell him that in time he would soon have a son. The words, "Is anything too hard for the Lord?" And the promise we read in chapter 15 is that Abraham would have a son to succeed him. To be fair, there is no mention that Sarah would be the mother of that son, although that obviously is implied that he's a married man. The distress here of a husband and wife who have no children would have been the same then as it is now, and I know that in the congregation this time there will be some good experiences. We've only seen read the beginning of the first book of Samuel, and hear again the pain and the feeling of distress of Hannah, who eventually became the mother of Samuel, felt. To remember that in ancient cultures and in some places now, the distress was all too real, and sadly was often compounded by a feeling, a belief, that it should all be blamed on the wife. Knowing that God had promised Abraham a son, Sarah then made an offer that was generous and was costly. She offered her maidservant to her husband as a concubine to have this child. And as we've seen in the culture of the day, many would have seen that as the only alternative. But then things went wrong. They tried to run ahead of God's plan for them. With Hagar, I suspect had no choice at all in the matter, pregnant by Abraham, deep human feelings soon started to come out. Sarah had humbled herself by offering Hagar, but she soon found out that it was much harder to take than she had imagined, and as Hagar hugely despised her, openly despised her, she was humiliated by the result. Incidentally, God sometimes humbles us, but it is people who humiliate us, and the two are not the same. Now, in the culture of the day, if a maidservant gave birth to a son, that son was to be brought up as a son of the family to belong to the husband and wife. But, and this next bit is important, there was a clear rule that the maidservant should be treated fairly. She could not be sold on or thrown out by the family. Sarah, by now deeply troubled, realized the mess that was happening, and knowing that Hagar could not be driven out of the household, she wrongly and foolishly behaved very badly towards Hagar, so much that Hagar soon ran away. Now, I know that Sarah and Hagar had fought, and I suspect that both had each in their separate ways been hurt to the very depths of their being. But as I read about how Hagar fled, probably going back home, as Shur, as it's mentioned where she stopped for water, Shur was on the border with Egypt. I felt sorry for Hagar, and I really quite warned for her. This next passage, if you have your Bible to Genesis 16, this next passage is no footnote. I must admit I haven't read it particularly closely before I had to read it for this purpose. But it really is no footnote. It tells us much about the purposes of God and of his character. And it's on this passage, rather than the history leading up to it, that I want to focus this morning. For Hagar, unlike Abram and Sarah, had known no covenants. She had had no choices, probably since she left Egypt, almost certainly as a slave. When she fled, and she was stopped by the spring on the way home, she was poor to the point of being destitute. She was a young woman, in a world where most of the power was held by powerful, probably older men. She was foreign, she was a slave, and she'd been rejected and abused by the very people who should have been taking responsibility for her. Oh, by the way, she had no choice of her own. She was expecting her master's child. The angel of the Lord who met with her had two messages for her. Firstly, go back to your mistress and resume your work there. And secondly, in the next breath, you will have a son, or he will be a wild donkey man. And your son will be the first of many descendants. Note that it is three messages, not just an instruction to go back and do as she's told and submit. Most important, these messages are straight from God himself. Now, no doubt, living in Abram's household, she heard about Abram's son. But here, he has heard God too. I must admit that I don't quite understand my biblical scholarship and understanding of Hebrew. Obviously, it's nil, but I don't understand the full details of this. In verses 7 to 12 of Genesis 16, she hears from an angel of the Lord. In verse 13, she's talking to God himself. And that is the important bit. And what a conversation. You are the God who sees me, she says. She's seen God, and she's lived to tell the tale. The television meeting. And her son was to be called Ishmael. God hears. He's heard her. He's heard of her cry. She was to be the mother of many. And indeed, many Arab people today trace their own line back to Ishmael, and therefore to Abraham and Hagar. But first, she had to go back to Abraham and Sarah for the purposes that God had told her about. They could only be fulfilled if she was back with Abraham and his household. At this point, as she turns to go back to Abraham and his household, I really want to press the pause button. Because I wonder, what was in her mind, what was in her heart, as she walked back? She knew she wasn't going back to an easy situation, and we know later on that life was no picnic at all for her. She must have wondered what she was going to meet. But what was in her mind and what was in her heart? After all, she was still a pregnant, destitute, abused, foreign, slave girl. But now, she knew inside herself that God had met with her. He had a plan for her, and that he was her God. He was her God, and she was his. If you're thinking, and her feelings like that, and I suspect they were, sounds familiar. Think of Jesus and the woman at the well at the beginning of John's Gospel. Jesus and the leprosy patient. Jesus, the blind beggar. Or the woman taken in adultery. The blind beggar, many like in Luke's Gospel, the woman taken in adultery is John chapter 8. Hated tax collector and all of the others. Hang on to that picture. For this passage, the Hagar looks forward to the time when God in the person of Jesus, the Son of Man, the type of the local church himself, and the Son of God. He was that, and he was mad, and he was evil. The Son of God walked the earth and went out of his way to find the very people who were outcasts for whatever reason in the world, or himself, as somebody do nowadays, they were arriving as a servant girl in Nepal. She had no other family. They had to sell her on as a servant because they couldn't afford to keep her. And the family she was serving didn't like her and wanted the secretary to get rid of her. They didn't approve of her. So they asked a Christian friend, "If you're a Christian, can you take her into your household?" She was 8 years old. The Christian friend took her and eventually his wife agreed that she should be adopted. We gave her an education and we brought her home. She was educated and baptized. She's now married with a 2-year-old son. We are so grateful for the opportunity to see her life change. That was the miracle commission. That was modern day paper. It's still going on. Those of us who know God inside ourselves have that responsibility to care for those in deep need. Whether that need is obvious out here, or whether it's that less obvious that someone else is very far from God. We do that not because we are told to do it, or because we think it's good, or because we want to earn brownie points. Our place in heaven is our place in heaven. But because inside us, we know that God has cared for us. He's rescued us, and like Hagar, knowing